As an illustration of what you can get if you do what has so eloquently been called a whole shebang or kitchen sink simulation, I just wanted to show a quick movie to start with of the evolution in the color magnitude diagram from a typical simulation. So this, the first frame here is just a snapshot of a simulation at about 4.7 gigayears that started with 30,000 stars, a 40% primordial binary fraction. It was evolved with the RCF MBody4 code on a Grape 6. And so this is my sort of ad hoc CMD with different color schemes for the different types of binaries and with a bias towards sort of having you see the more interesting types of systems. So main sequence stars and main sequence binaries are just here as single white dots in the diagram. A single white dwarf is just a single magenta dot. Double white dwarf binaries get an entry as a diamond there. Main sequence white dwarf binaries here are the green diamonds. If one is undergoing mass transfer, so a CV at that time, then I've encircled it with this orange looking circle. Then other types of stars, like giants, they get a red symbol, and you see some blue stragglers up there. And then say if a blue straggler is in a binary with a main sequence star, the main sequence star gets an entry next to the blue straggler. Anyway, it's sort of ad hoc, but it's just to give you some impression of, or some idea of being able to identify the different things as it whizzes through the evolution. And then here, this is the radial profiles for a subset of these populations. So the white line, white solid line is for the single main sequence stars. The dashed white line is for the main sequence binaries. Purple line for the white dwarfs, and the red line for the giants. So obviously, at this time, the giants are more centrally concentrated than the binaries, which are themselves more centrally concentrated than the main sequence stars, so mass segregation. And then here, just to show some how the global properties in the cluster are evolving with time, the white line is the number density in the core of the simulation. So with such a large primordial binary fraction, you really don't see anything that you could term as core collapse, not even this spike here, really. So it's a bit hard to see the scale there, I'm sorry, but this is 400 stars per cubic parsec, and as a function of time, and the simulation will go from zero up to about 5,500 gigayears. And then the red line is just the current cluster mass scaled by the initial cluster mass, which obviously goes from one down towards zero. So anyway, let me start that. So I mean, maybe I've put too much on one diagram, I'm not sure, but if you just watch the color magnitude diagram, obviously you see, and I should say it's a time series of snapshots spaced roughly 30 million years apart. That's why you see sort of things jumping around. So yeah, at different times you get a different number of blue stragglers in different types of binaries, whatever. See the turnoff coming down. Your main sequence white dwarf binaries sort of moving across here as the white dwarf cools and the main sequence star starts to dominate the color. And an accumulation here of double white dwarfs as you go on in time down towards here. So let me just do that again. So please, if you have any specific questions about this right now, go ahead and ask them before I move on.
For any potential HST TAC members, this now proposal, we pointed out that you can actually find the line more than one dash class because they're much, much fainter than the end of the main sequence, which is not the case yet. It's only the main sequence.
Right, so.
White dwarfs are way, way down.
Sure. And even here, there are some white dwarfs which have cooled down here. I've just cut it off for purposes of illustration.
What's this triangle?
What here?
Well, it's gone down. For a while, there's a
You mean like in the sequence itself? So this sort of hook. So that's a mass effect where your white dwarfs that cooled earlier, which were more massive, cooled on a track over here. So if you watch carefully, sequence sort of moves across in time. And also, as the white dwarf gets older, its cooling rate slows down. So you get this accumulation of white dwarfs along here. And then at some point, the cooling speeds up again and they shoot off down here, as Brad pointed out to me. So. Okay. Well, you just, as part of your initial conditions, your first choice is what the binary fraction should be, and then just make some sensible choices on the period distribution for that binary population, and the mass ratio distribution as well. So in this, it's a uniform mass ratio distribution. Well, they interact. So when you see an orange circle go around one of those binaries, it is actually interacting within the simulation at that time. But I don't account for any peculiarities, say luminosity from the accretion disk, in generating this diagram. So the position here may not be the actual true position at that time. So to continue with your question. The binaries are evolving, they're interacting with other cluster stars, mass transfer has been modeled. So the blue stragglers that have been formed are from main sequence, mass transfer. Sure, so it's a whole shebang simulation. I still don't know what a shebang is, but I imagine it sort of means everything. But yeah, well, I don't know if it's worth showing that one more time. But yeah, that's the point. We're doing, following the binary evolution in concert with the dynamics. And so if by chance, you have real-time mass transfer going on, a third star comes in and interrupts that system, that happens. If that happens, it's modeled.
But I guess what I was trying to get at is, since there must be a lot of assumptions about these processes and how they proceed.
So the assumptions are only as good as the underlying assumptions in your favorite binary population synthesis algorithm.
So you try to quantify these results.
Right.
Well,
let me do that now. When it comes to the natural end here, I may as well let it finish off. Right, so yes, that's just a bunch of colorful dots jumping around in a diagram. Doesn't really mean that much. So here is, after 4 giga years, some figures to show what's going on with the double white dwarf population in the simulation, right? Which obviously, the binaries are more centrally concentrated, but the double white dwarfs themselves are even more centrally concentrated. So we would expect them to be quite, as a population, dynamically altered. So the background here, and this is the period distribution, number is a function of the logarithm of the period in seconds. So I apologize for the poor quality of the diagram there. But this is this is 5, so that's roughly 1 day. Period of 1 day there. So the background distribution is the period distribution I would get if I took my, 9,000 binaries that I had at time zero out of the cluster and evolved them using exactly the same evolution algorithm as the mBody code has. And then the purple histogram is the actual distribution of periods after 4 giga years. So it shows you, these wide ones, all the double white dwarfs you get without any actual binary interaction, so no common envelope or anything. And these are all generally broken up in the simulation in 3 and 4 body interactions. But the good thing you get is this enhancement of the short period systems, so the interesting systems in terms of having merger timescales comparable to the age of the galaxy or so on. It's just done in the standard best way that we can do. So that's an alpha of 3 using the energy prescription that we use, which then there's sort of an alternative one from sort of the Ivan and Livio Tudikov school, which would correspond to an alpha. So this would correspond to an alpha of 1 in their prescription. But really it's not important what particular parameters we've assumed. The important thing is the difference you get making the same assumptions, right? Obviously, there are some important things, like I could make some choices that wouldn't give me any double white dwarfs in the underlying population, and that wouldn't be interesting at all. But, and then this is the eccentricity distribution for the non-zero systems, which is about 27% of all the double white dwarfs in the simulation at that time. Obviously, they would all be zero without the dynamics. And within this, so roughly a fifth of the double white dwarfs in here are from non-primordial binaries. So if an exchange interaction has generated a binary. So, well, a primordial binary was part of the evolution path to get there, but it's and now a different star has been exchanged in with one of the original components. So then, if I take that population and calculate the actual merger rate of the super Chandrasekhar double white dwarfs as a function of time. So this is the merger rate for an instantaneous burst population, where the red line is what I would expect for the same population without the cluster environment. And then the white line is the histogram from all the double white dwarfs collated from all the simulations I've done so far, which are sort of small, moderate to large open cluster size simulations. So basically, with the in the cluster environment, we get about a factor of 10 enhancement in the number of merger events that you would expect. And this comes from, so say per one system that I did expect from the binary population synthesis, I've got an extra one from an exchange interaction that gave me a close binary I wouldn't have had otherwise. One where a primordial binary that wouldn't have been interesting had a perturbation to its orbit that reduced the period and meant that I got mass transfer where otherwise I wouldn't have. And then also, not so prevalent, but almost to the same number. Well, contradicting myself. But you also get some where you make the double white dwarf, it has a long merger timescale, but it then gets its period reduced or an eccentricity induced, and this alteration then makes it interesting in terms of merger. And you know, this is irrespective of what you assume happens after the merger, type 1a, or it makes you a neutron star or whatever.
But Jared, that gives you a factor 3 on your factor 10.
Sorry, so that's the average. So
or the other factor 3.
That's okay. So say per 1,000 binaries from my binary population synthesis, I would expect with that particular choice of parameters, the common envelope parameter and whatever, I'd expect about 0.2 of these events per 1,000 binaries. So in real numbers, that's either 0 or 1. So yeah, I was just rounding up there with the 1s. Does that answer that? So when I count the actual numbers, it is 10 times more than I get. If you take it down to the small fractions, then. Do I have much time left? Okay, well, I'm going to skip that. All right, so that was a high binary frequency sort of open cluster model. We're talking about globular clusters, so I'll just mention this simulation, which sort of carries on from what Holger was saying. So this is a simulation of 100,000 stars, now which is 1% primordial binaries, just due to computational constraints. And this, for reasons I won't go into, this cluster was put on an orbit at about 6 kiloparsecs from the galactic center. So here you see the evolution of the core density as a function of time, and this is just where the simulation got to when I left to come here. So it's just, I would say, just gone through core collapse. This is a log plot now, so this is 3 orders of magnitude increase in the central density. And you do also see a dip, corresponding dip here. This is the density within the half-mass radius. So you see a corresponding small dip in that. And then the mass fraction of remnants in the core of the cluster as a function of time. And you see how that sort of shoots up the core collapse. This is 0.8 here. Apologies again for the resolution. I will just mention that, so in these open cluster type simulations that I did with 30,000 stars, I did simulations at 40, 10, and 0% primordial binaries. And you do see some dependence of the remnant mass fraction in the core on the binary fraction, on the primordial binary fraction, where if you have more binaries, you have slightly lower remnant mass fraction in the core. Because the white dwarfs are going to be born in the central regions because their progenitor stars were more massive than the turnoff, then they're in there. If you've got a lot of binaries, then you have the potential to start kicking them out on radial orbits as well. But whether that dependence will translate into the cluster regime, I can't really say. I have to do the simulations. But
what's the initial half-life relaxation time
of this model? It's about 500 to 600 million years. The open cluster model was more like 200 to 300.
So this is
this here, yeah. Sorry. That was about 800 initially. This is about 5 to 6 TIH at this point. Yeah. So it's about 500 now. Yeah. So this red line is when the core collapse happened. This is the number of double degenerates in the system as a function of time. The dashed line is the number that are non-primordial, so a subset of these that have come via exchange interactions. So you see here, this is about the time where the core density starts going up. You get an increase in the number of double degenerates just due to an increase in the exchange, so the dynamically formed binaries, double white dwarfs, which is going on in the core. But then as you get to even higher densities, you're seeing a destruction as well, so it's working against you. And just for comparison, here's the blue stragglers going along here. You do see a sharp rise in those, even though the numbers are quite small there.
Where did you transfer the mass function?
That's from 0.1 to 50.
50, so you form 10 solar black holes
in there? No. Because even if I did, I would form maybe one or two from that IMF, but the sort of initial final mass relation for black holes that I was using in these simulations gave quite a low black hole mass. So for a 40 solar mass, it gives about a 3 solar mass black hole, because it wasn't accounting for any fallback in the models.
So I'm trying to understand, what's the components of heavy remnants that spar after when most of the massive stars have evolved? What are you left with?
Well, they're mostly white dwarfs, so the neutron star retention is about 5% of neutron stars.
So they're gone.
Most of them, yeah. So that's primarily white dwarfs.
Handful of three solar mass black holes.
Well, let me just I'll skip that one just to finish. So yeah, there's maybe two or three black holes that stayed in the cluster and wandered around. So here's just, well, it's not so much an anecdote, I don't know if it's amusing, but it's interesting. Because just to sort of catalogue the behaviour of one black hole in the simulation. So it formed 1.9 solar masses from a 25 solar mass single star at about 20 million years. Got a small kick, so that removed it out of the core. So it gradually moved back into the core. And then, so in this 500 million year time frame, when this black hole is back in the core and the core density has now risen by about a factor of 2, it, in that time frame, has 5 distinct binary partners. So it's in there, it's swapping around with other stars. Finally, it settles into a binary with this one solar mass white dwarf companion, which then gets further perturbed, and it collides with that white dwarf. I mean, just assume that the two stars merge, so you've now got a 2.9 solar mass black hole. Then forms another binary with a low mass main sequence star. The eccentricity of that system is very high. So they collide at periastron. And also that collision, the interaction that induced that eccentricity also kicked the system back out of the core a little bit, which sort of explains this gap here, this lack of activity between 5.3 and 5.8 gigayears for this black hole. It then sinks back, it's then back into the core by this time. It's formed a binary with a very heavy white dwarf, about a 10-day period. It's still in there at the moment, so they may have collided by now. I just haven't checked. So, all right, so I'm going to stop. So the white dwarf was in a double white dwarf binary. The black hole exchanges itself in, kicks out the low mass white dwarf. Yep. All right, so I'm going to end there. Just to mention my main collaborators, most notably Sverasev, who developed the InBody code that I used for this, and there's a few papers if you're interested.
Over time, you've had a lot of questions.
Could I see your anisotropy results?
Oh, sure.
The lower graph looked interesting, and I'd like to know what it represents.
Okay, so so this is the anisotropy parameter in the inner 10% Lagrangian radii, and this is between the 80 and 90% Lagrangian radii. The white line is for all stars, and the red line is for just the white dwarfs. So you're sort of seeing the evidence here that the white dwarfs are more centrally concentrated than the main sequence stars, so they're getting kicked out here on radial orbits from the core as the core density increases. So they're moving back up towards isotropy at that point.
0. Minus 0.5, what does that mean?
All right, so minus 1 would be completely tangentially anisotropic.
Tangential? No, radial.
So initially, it's hard to see here. You do see a radial anisotropy developing, and that's because of stars getting kicked out on radial orbits from the core. But then these low-mass stars that are getting kicked out, the ones on radial orbits, are escaping the cluster, getting stripped off, just leaving you in the outer regions with ones that are rotating around in the outer regions. So this is a general trend that other people have seen as well. Just for the white dwarfs, the fact that it's going back up, I'm not sure I've seen that documented before. So.
You mean I get the final word?
That could be dangerous, yeah.
So what is the main message here? I mean, on the one hand, it's fantastic that you can really do these calculations now where you really put in everything and mm-hmm. you can track individual systems and follow these very complicated histories. On the other hand, if every single system that we are interested in the end, like, say, X-ray binaries or millisecond pulsars or the kinds of things that people tend to find most interesting about global clusters, have formed by going through these kinds of horribly complicated scenarios and histories, mm-hmm. then it's very depressing.
No, I wouldn't say that. So I think the first thing you need to do is a large enough simulation that you can directly compare it with observations of a particular cluster. So the 100,000 star models are getting towards that. What we really need is something with 50 to 100,000 stars left at 10 gigayears. Then if you look at trends for a particular population, so pick a few, say blue stragglers and X-ray binaries, and you're trying to compare to clusters that have these in number.
But is this kind of history that you showed us is typical of how you form, say, an X-ray binary in a cluster? So, I mean, how are you ever going to be able to calculate this right? I mean, here you have all kinds of reasonable prescriptions along the way,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, multiple collisions, multiple partners, multiple.
Oh yeah, so if you want to be pessimistic, this just adds an extra and very large uncertainty into all the uncertainties involved in your binary evolution algorithm. But on the other hand, if you have a large enough sample of stars in your simulation, well, for one particular star, the events may appear quite random. If we sort of average over that population, I think we'll see trends developing. And then if we can sort of constrain key populations, say number of blue stragglers relative to CVs in a particular cluster, and then try and then constrain the initial parameters of the binary population then against the cluster environment, then we can really say something. But you can pick interesting bits out of it, but how much you believe that really is a question of faith, I suppose. Yeah.
I'd like to thank our speakers again.